Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
Welcome to the Torture Cast. It is now, can't believe it's May already, Eric, May 3rd, 2021. And this is episode 223, the podcast by and for fan of your first place. That sounds odd. We haven't said that since 2016. San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King. And joining me today is one Eric Nathanson. How you doing, buddy? I guess you're kind of polishing one off here, huh?
I woke up kind of late. Don't leave a man home alone. Things happen.
Yeah, as you said, unsupervised. That's awesome.
Yeah, unsupervised is exactly right. I'm doing well. I'm thrilled that the Giants were able to get a victory yesterday so that they could have a happy flight to Colorado. And I'm looking forward to the fact that we're talking about a first-place ball club with a winning record in the month of May. It's like you said, I can't believe it's May already. And here we are talking about a first-place club. And happy two-year anniversary to the comeback game in Cincinnati where Stephen Vogt hit the game-tying home run 2 years
that's
ago.
That's right.
Yeah, when they were down 8-0 and they came back
runs.
To win.
Yeah,
2 years ago tonight. It was a Friday night.
Yeah, I don't know how long first place is going to last, but as Borat would say,
wow, wow, it's very nice.
It's very, very nice. Yeah, let's dissect to see how the Giants found themselves in this position, because I would tell you something. First of all, if you told me on May 3rd the Giants would be alone, technically alone, in first place, I'd be like, yeah, come on, you're joshing with me. I know it's early in the season. But secondly, I would have assumed that this prior week, because they were not in first place at the beginning of the week, that they would have, you know, gone 5-1 or something. They went 3-3. So it's not like they blew the doors off. They just kind of treaded water, but it was the Dodgers who've just been playing like crap lately. And uncharacteristically, this is one of the worst stretches I can remember in the last few years.
Yeah, it's kind of bonkers that the Giants could go 3-3 and move into first place. That's not something we ever absolutely considered. And not only are they in first place, they're tied with the best record in baseball. They're 17-11 along with the Milwaukee Brewers, who are beating up on said well, they beat the Dodgers a couple times, and then the Dodgers whooped them yesterday. But still, they're part of the reason, those Brewers, why the Giants are in first place. So 17-11, though, best record in baseball. Winning record alone in first place for, what did you say, the first time since 2016?
Since 2016. I believe August of 2016 was the last time they held first place,
which is
crazy.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's really, we're a whole month into the season, so we're at the point where we can start being like, well, maybe it's not a fluke. Maybe the Giants are good, and we'll get to talk about that today.
It's not like the Tigers were holding first place and then they plummeted, or you know, the Rockies or some of the really crappy teams.
Or
the Pirates or something like that. Yeah, so let's go ahead and review the standings. As you just said, the Giants are 17-11, tied with the Brewers for the best record in the National League. They're just behind Kansas City by percentage points, who are 16-10. Kansas City, another team that you wouldn't have expected right now. I'm sure if they have a fan podcast, they're saying the similar things to what we are right now. The Dodgers, of course, closely behind at a half game back. The Padres did gain a game on the Giants over the last series, but they're 1.5 back at 16-13. The resurgent Diamondbacks, they're playing very well right now. They're only 2 games back. So that's 4 teams all within 2 games. And then, of course, the Rockies bring up the behind at 7 games back at 10-18. So we all knew that the West was going to be a really good division this year. But so far, 4 out of the 5 teams are above 500 and all within 2 games. So, I mean, technically you could say it's anyone's race right now. And there's plenty of baseball left, obviously. But this is surprising. I got to say, this is surprising the way they stand right now. And thank God the Dodgers are only 17-12. But you do expect them to go on one of those streaks again like they did at the beginning of the season where they were like 12-2 or whatever. You know, that's going to come. And hopefully the Giants catch them when they're down like they are now, because they haven't even played the Dodgers and they have to play them 19 times this year.
Yeah, and be and at playing San Diego six times already, and being 3-3 against them, and still holding first place, makes it even stronger right now. But you're right; the Dodgers are going to go on their tear at some point. They're going to do what they do, and the Giants are not going to keep up their pace. It's funny, Brooks just pointed out second best run differential in the National League, but let's be honest. Part of that is because of one of the games we're going to go over when they won. What was it? 12-0. Yeah, yep. Right. 12-0. They were like plus 10 in run differential before that game, and they skyrocketed after that game. But is it sustainable? I mean, we're going to see. We know the Dodgers cannot sustain losing. So, you know, the Giants have their opportunity right now. The fact that they're splitting with San Diego is just the key. I mean, this weekend series, we're going to get into it in a minute, but this weekend series was just such a big series. And that's why I'm feeling so positive coming out of yesterday. You know, one out of three is not bad. The way that they play this series, especially the way they handle the bullpen. And it gives me some sort of promise looking forward. You know, I predicted 88 wins, but I didn't think the Giants would actually be on pace to get there. I thought that their hot month would come in July or August. August specifically, because they have a ton of home games.
They do.
So,
yeah.
You know, we got May coming up right now. They only have like six home games in the month of May. So this is going to be a tough part of their schedule, and they're really going to have to buckle down and go on the road and win some games. So I think this is the month that's really going to tell us whether or not the Giants are in this for real, or if this is just some sort of mirage and they've played well to start the season.
Exactly. So let's go ahead and dive into the three-game series against Colorado at home that's wrapped up the homestand before they went on the road to San Diego. So I have a couple of the longer combined highlights only for this first game, which they won 12-0, and then the final game yesterday in which they won 7-1. And we'll talk about all the ones in between, but here you are, highlights for the 12-0 victory against the Rockies. Oh, here we go.
DiSclafani. Swing and a miss, and that's how this game gets started.
Wow. DiSclafani, our one hitter, has established his fastball.
And it's strike three call, and he knew it.
Again, the same pitch that he got Tapia on was that two-seam fastball at 95. This one starts on the outside corner, then just snaps back in the strike zone. This is just a great pitch.
Absolutely. I wish I could throw like that.
Look at the performance on that pitch. He knows he's got a good one tonight.
He was on that sort of night. I mean, we're about to talk about it.
Got him. Strikes out the side.
First complete game for the Giants
so
this
now,
year.
The Giants have
absolutely
two runners in scoring position.
Full shutout. It's nice when you have a big lead.
Base hit left field. It's good.
And they jumped out right away too.
Belt will stop as the throw goes through. Runners at the corners. Longoria gives the Giants a 1-0 lead.
So here's Buster Posey.
Base hit, left center field.
Oh my God, it wasn't a home run.
Longoria,
I know.
Who is been told not to run hard, is going to jog in.
Oh, yeah, Longo left his
a double.
Robbed him an RBI because he couldn't run.
Giants runners in second and third with Ruff at the plate.
Ruff picked him up.
On the ground into the hole and a base hit. Longoria gets to jog home. It's 3-0.
Longo was hurting, and he got to jog around the bases completely that time.
How about that? I mean, Gomper's first outing against the Giants. He goes 6 3rd. Gives
yeah, you and I could have done that.
Here they've got four hits off him in this first inning.
I mean, he got pulled in the bottom of the second inning. Longoria.
They have barreled him up.
So here's Dickerson, who's hitting at 236. Slowly hit. It's going to get a run in. It's 4-0. Put it in play.
Through the bat. He did that in a two-strike count.
Slater at third, Flores at second, and here's Longoria, who knocked in the Giants.
What's nice about this is there's so many highlights.
Into the game.
Yes.
And past Tapia.
And early. These are really how they should be winning games, is jumping out early.
Yeah, that's one of the things we talked about is, you know, they're going to win a lot of, you know, win and lose a lot of one-run games. It's torture baseball has come back. And for the most part, that's absolutely been the case. But this is one of their few, you know, laughers. Yesterday was nice, too. It was a nice, comfortable win. They're not happening very often. We'll take them.
I mean, this is Longo hurt. The guy comes out, he goes 2 for 2, and he's like, all right, I'm done for the day. We're up 6 runs. It's the second inning.
Third, Ruff at second, Dickerson at first. Dubon in the first was walked intentionally.
Swing, and there's a drive in the center field, hit well, going back, Daza still going back, and it's off the wall to the left of the 391
marker. Well, and Doobie showing some signs
Osler
here.
Scores, Ruff
yeah,
scores.
Balls are starting to fall for him
Dickerson,
a little bit.
And they all score.
So that was the one that really so felt like Trevor he got Story. The monkey off his back.
Story goes which would have been a bomb Ruff to either field, there. But.
And he makes the sliding catch. Not a problem.
1-2 pitch. Blackman strikes out swinging. Good old-fashioned hardball. 5 strikeouts, 4 scoreless innings for Anthony DeSclafani.
Yeah, the rotation is really settling in, and we'll talk about it and break it down. But we got Buster using his hips like a 26-year-old Buster.
Another homer for Buster.
Granted, that would not have been a home run prior to the fences being moved in. Would have been almost a can of corn.
He's on pace for something like 36 home runs or something now.
See that swing again.
Well, he finished with 6 in the month of April.
So yeah, there you go. 36.
Incredible.
And he unloads and backspins a high fastball.
But he's got the high leg kick back and those hips. I mean, they're looking healthy.
Take a look at this flash can. It was up there.
They're staying in and not turning until he makes contact with the ball. That's you can really see in his swing how he's locked in.
Yeah, but you can see how that was an out in front of the old warning track.
Yeah, what he started. Now this killed me. In the Giants chatter Facebook group, I set the over/under at complete games this year at 1 because I didn't think that Gabe would ever let anybody go completely. And then Disco throws a complete game shutout.
On a slider that broke down.
A little easier, when you have a 12-run lead. Like, all right, we'll keep it.
That's the truth. I mean, if it had been a 2-0 game, who knows if he still would have been out there.
For DeSclafani. Here's the windup. The pitch. Strike 3 call.
On 100 pitches.
A fastball to the inside corner about knee high. And that is the shutout.
So, yeah, that was a heck of a game there by the Giants. And they went cruising on and they won. One out of the next two, and let's go ahead and talk about it. Buster Posey, by the way, that game had 4 hits. His 5th home run, 4 RBIs by Dubon, 3 RBI each by Longo and Posey itself. And, of course, team batting with runners in scoring position was a beautiful 5-for-11. So that's how that happens. Game 2 didn't go as well. They lost 7-5 and 10, and it was one of those frustrating games where you look back at the coulda, woulda, shouldas, and this was definitely a coulda, woulda, shoulda. The Rockies, you know, Aaron Sanchez, he's been way better than I would have expected, but he is pulling a little bit of a high wire act, I have to say. He's been pitching with a lot of junk and a lot of inaccuracy. He's putting a lot of runners on base that he's not getting penalized for. However, this game, he did get knocked. He had 5 walks. 2 of them did score. In fact, the Rockies' first 3 runs, those runners all got aboard via the walk. And that's where it gets frustrating because those are those free passes. And, you know, 1's going to happen here or there, but 3 in a game, that's rough, you know? And that's where the game was tied at 3 going into the 9th. So, you know, you just shave off 1 or 2 of those and maybe McGee can lock it down. But speaking of McGee, of course, he gave up a solo shot in the 9th, which, you know, I saw some of Giants Twitter go crazy about again, saying he's washed up, he's done, he's hurt, he's whatever. It's like, look, these guys are going to do this from time to time.
Yeah, that's the situation you want him in. It's a 1-run game at that point.
Yeah, it's a 1, you know. Well, then it was tied when he came in, and he allowed that solo shot. And then, of course, you're thinking, all right, well, maybe this game's over. And then Brandon Crawford absolutely ropes one. I don't have the highlight here, but he ropes one into the drink for a splash hit. And his wife was very, very happy on Twitter and then was very upset later. But that tied the game after that leadoff home run in the bottom of the 9th. But, man, it just didn't work out in the 10th. The Rockies end up scoring 3 runs, all off of rookie Gregory Santos, who has shown some brilliant stuff. But the location isn't always there. And, you know, he got whacked. Obviously, you have a runner on second, so he's not responsible for that run. It's not charged as an earned run. But he allowed 2 home runs. Essentially 2 solo shots, really, but there weren't. You know, 1 was a 2-run home run. And a solo shot. So 3 runs in the inning. The Giants ended up scratching 1 in the bottom and lost 7-5. But again, is one of those games where the Giants had opportunities to score and they had gifts that they you know, bestowed upon the Rockies in the form of three walks that all scored. Well, three out of the five walks scored in the beginning of the game. So frustrating. It happens. It's baseball. It's 162. But they came right back in game three behind Alex Wood and won 7-3. He had another great outing. He's now 3-0 in the year. Six innings pitched, four hits, two earned runs, nine Ks over those six. And the team again had a nice night with runners in scoring position going 4-10. So that's, you know, what the Giants are going to rely on is timely hitting. They're not going to have that juggernaut of an offense necessarily. We thought it would be a little bit better than it is now, and I think it will continue to get better. And the batting average has slowly been climbing, which has been a very, very positive sign for the team. Slowly but surely. I think in this last week they hit like 233, which is not great, but it raised their team batting average. So any positive sign we'll take. But they ended up winning 2 out of 3 against Colorado. I don't know if you had anything to say about that game three against the Rockies that you saw.
No, just the whole series in general, the fact that they've played the Rockies six times now and they've taken five of them, they're doing what they're supposed to do. That's just, it's really, it's good to see that and not sit here frustrated over, you know, bad losses, because they've lost, they're 1-3 in extra inning games. So that middle game, you know, it just happens. It's the rule. You know, I mean, I can't say that they're winning or losing because of the rule. The games are just getting over quicker because of the new rule. I don't think that they're blowing anything. And that's why it was nice to see them bounce back after losing in extra innings, because they could have taken all three from Colorado. They could be 6-0 against Colorado already this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, winning 5 of 6 against the worst team in your division, that's what you're supposed to do. So, to me, it was a quality series and a quality homestand. After who I don't even remember who was in before then, but it was a winning homestand, and we talk about it. Play 500 on the road, win at home, and
yep,
the Giants are doing that so far.
Yeah, exactly. I believe they're just one game under 500 now on the road because of the series that they just completed against the San Diego Padres, and we'll get into that right now. Game one, they lost another squeaker. They left they're 3-3 against the Padres overall, but all six games are at Petco Park. So I mean, you know. 3-3 on the road against supposedly the rival to the Dodgers in terms of, you know, quality and talent of a roster. I'm fine with that. You know, we'll see what happens when San Diego comes to Oracle Park this coming weekend. But, you know, I will take 500 against the Padres right now. I'll take 500 against the Dodgers. I mean, that's supposedly the elite talent in the National League. So if they're doing that in their house, thank you very much. But they're not only hanging with them, they really should have won 4 out of those 6, maybe even 5 out of those 6, you could argue. But we're not going to get into all the minutia of the first series of the year, which they had, you know, one or two of those tough games. Despite Posey leading off the game, or leading off in the first inning with his 6th home run of the month, which leads the team, Yu Darvish did settle down and struck out 12 Giants in just 6 1/3 inning. So, I mean, think about that. That's basically, that's almost every other out was, it's even more than that, right?
It's yeah. More than that,
yeah. That's 19 outs, right? So he 19, recorded 19 outs
19.
And 12 of 19 were strikeouts. So that's not getting it done. Obviously, Yu Darvish is a good starter. I mean, he's been great. I mean, you followed him, I'm sure, a little bit on the Cubs and what have you. And there's no doubt that he's talented, but frustrating they couldn't get the bat on the ball too often. But the Giants still had many opportunities to win the game, including, of course, a pinch hit would-be grand slam by Darren Ruff in the 7th. It did just go foul, and so it was correctly overturned on replay. But then he struck out, and then the next batter struck out. So you had bases loaded with one out. You get no one runs across. Then the next inning, they loaded the bases again with nobody out and only struck one run across on a double play ball. Overall, they went 0-9. With runners in scoring position. And that's what I'm talking about right there. You lose 3-2, but I mean, they should have scored 2 or 3 more runs easily, right? And you obviously had a pinch hit foul grand slam. You can't take anything away from that. But they were saying in the win prediction percentage, the probability, I guess, you know, they have those real time graphs, that grand slam that was reverted back to a foul ball swung the win probability 47%.
Oh,
which
wow.
Makes sense. You know, it's 4 runs in the 7th inning that gives the Giants a lead. So, but I mean, you know, man, talk about when they say baseball is a game of inches. That was kind of in a microcosm right there. It was frustrating, but
I thought that ball was gone when he hit it. I really did. And watching it live, it was like, you know, is it gone? Is it not? And then we saw a replay and it wasn't. But that was the frustrating thing. That's the story of the whole Padres series, is leaving runners on base. Going 0 for 9, and they left 8 on base for the game. It just, they're not situationally hitting. I'm getting kind of tired, and this is part of the reason they lost Friday night. Yeah. I'm getting kind of tired of just seeing three true outcomes. I'm tired of just strikeouts, walks, or home runs. Like, put the ball in play. All they had to do was put the ball in play. And like you said, they had opportunities with the bases loaded, and we had strikeouts after that. I mean, Ruff struck. You knew Ruff was going to strike out after that home run got called back. It was just absolutely set in stone at that point. And then Talkman comes up, and he also strikes out. But they had their fair share of opportunities, and by not putting the ball in play, they're killing themselves lately. I mean, they had in the fifth, they had Crawford got hit by a pitch. Duggar follows that up with a double. And then, Webb strikes out, and then Tommy La Stella hits a weak ground ball to the first baseman. But it's been the story of the whole series, is they'd get guys on, and then, you know, they'd hit into a double play. In that game, in the eighth inning, they went single, walk, walk to lead off the eighth, and then the Longoria grounds into a double play, and then Dubon grounds out. And this was my biggest deal. This guy gives up a single. It was Pomerantz. Gives up a single and two walks. Nobody could find the plate. What does Longoria do? He comes up and swings at the first pitch and grounds into a double play. Like, what the F are you doing, man? Like,
take a free gift. I mean, you know.
Right.
At least take two. Yeah, usually in that situation. I mean, I know the pros are they have a whole different scenario in the way we were raised, Eric, and I know we're a little bit old school. You know, it's sad that I'm like older than every Major League Baseball player now. I hate that. You know, but, you know, look, I know it's all about swing as hard as you can with two strikes and launch angle and whatever you want to talk about, right? You know, and the defensive shifts. It's the game has changed. But in that situation, I just think the old adage, when you're down or it's tied, and when you have a pitcher who's lost control, you always were told, you know, your coach always said, take till you get a strike.
Yep.
Take till you get a strike, period. Because they may open up the at-bat with two balls, and now you're sitting pretty until you get a strike. Even if he opens up with a strike, but he still is exhibiting that wildness, he could throw three straight balls, and now you're sitting 3-1. Point is, capitalize on the inconsistencies, and don't give him a free out. That's the whole premise of that, because they may end up giving you a free pass, or you get into a good hitter's count and you get some meatball down the middle because he's just trying to find the zone. That's the whole theory behind it. And look, I know Longo would probably say, well, that was the meatball. That's why I jumped on it. And of course, you know, it ends up being a double play. But and you know, if he hit a grand slam, we wouldn't have been talking about it. But it's just one of those things where it's like, make him work, make the pitcher earn it. Don't give him a freebie right off the bat.
I'm continue to be underwhelmed by the Giants batting coaches. They just don't seem to have an approach when they're coming to the plate. The approach is all find the pitch that you want to hit and drive it as far as you can. And it's a little weird as Giants fans to kind of have to adjust to this.
Yeah,
because we're not used to all or nothing mentality, and it seems to be what it is now. You know, and I also can see the flip side. I can totally see jumping on the first pitch because the guy's been wild and you know he's going to try to get one over on the first pitch. So you're sitting there waiting for a cookie. You know, the problem is, like you said, try to get yourself into a better count instead of dealing with, dealing with the first pitch. At least give yourself a hitter's count where he is forced to throw one in there and you know it's coming. And then I see what you brought up on video. The way this game ended, this whole series, the umpiring was atrocious. And I saw somebody going online, you know, you try to do this and you try to do that. Well, let me tell you, man, I've done it. Yeah. I've done it. And I'm going to shit on the umpiring from this weekend because it was that bad. I felt like they went to replay every other close play. They had to go to replay. And then just behind the plate, these strike zones were just ridiculous with how they floated.
I mean, I'm assuming that – I forget the guy's name. You know, I thought it was Angel Hernandez or Eric
Hamari
right away. Obviously, it wasn't Eric Gregg. Rest in peace. But, I mean, he must have had a dinner reservation or something. Because, was it his anniversary or something? He's like, guys, I got to get out of here because I'm going to play this. For those of you listening to the audio podcast, just a reminder real quickly, we do stream this live on Facebook video every single Monday. So we are bringing up video highlights. So what I brought right now, of course, is the last sequence in the ninth inning. I believe there was one out at the time. Wilmer Flores is up at the plate against Padres closer Mark Melancon, ex-Giant, who just never could fit in here, but apparently dominates as a closer everywhere else he goes. Sits here, not with one, not with two, but three straight balls clearly outside, out of the zone. Wilmer takes all three, and all three are called. So here they are, in order. First one.
Strike one.
And that's not even close. It's not even like catching the black. And there's Wilmer. He's barking. He's like, you got to be kidding me, man.
I think what also drives me nuts about this
is... You look back at this one. Sure, there are two outs to go here.
I'll go ahead and turn down the volume there, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, it's funny, the Padres, you can tell the Padres announcers are not thrilled about this. How did Kepler not get tossed?
Pomerantz. Serious trouble. It's been a tight rollback all night long.
Yeah, they don't even address that one. And I don't know. I guess Flores at this point, here's a replay of pitch two. I mean, again, the Padres, are they just like the announcers just kind of being quiet about this?
The 0-2 pitch.
And here it is, number three.
That's strike three, two down in the ninth inning. Back-to-back K's for Mark Melancon.
Poor Flores.
How did Gabe not get tossed there? I don't understand. Go out there. Fight. I don't care. It's a one-run game. Go fight for your guy. Go scream at the umpire. It might not be for this game. It might be for other games. Set a precedent, but go fight for your guys.
Look how far outside that is.
That's like at least 6 inches. At least.
I love the Padres announcers literally just go, oh, his setup's outside. Fastball. And that's it. Like, you don't hear anything else from him. I think the internal monologue is like, Jesus Christ, did we just get away with three straight bad calls there?
I feel like, I don't know if you've noticed this too, but I feel like umpiring across the board has just been horrible this year. Chad, did you see that Andrew McCutchen play the other night?
You know what? I saw the hubbub about it, and I forgot to go look at the highlight. I honestly did not see
it. Oh, my God. They ruled him out of the baseline, and the guy never went out of the baseline. And this is the same as the week before. There was a guy running up the first baseline that they said interfered, and the guy never interfered. Like, for some reason, umpires are looking for shit that's not there this year. And, you know, it's getting frustrating. When you're in a one-run game, I mean, I know it's not a pennant race because it was April, but – I mean, hell, these are the games that matter. I don't get mad at umpiring too often, but this whole weekend was just
Look, I know if the strike zone was correctly called there, 9 out of 10 times, it's not going to have an effect on the final, you know, score of the game. Wilmer could have grounded out. He could have singled and then just been stranded. Whatever. We're not saying, oh, well, the Giants would have won if it's hard to watch the bat literally get taken out of his hand. I mean, you see occasional bad calls and you go, okay, well, strike one or strike two, an occasional strike three, and you're like, that's just baseball. You know, I mean, umpiring and human error is a part of it. That was so egregious. I don't know what to say. And the NBA has that 2-minute report. You're familiar with that, where they, in the last 2 minutes of every game, they file a report saying, okay, our referees were wrong on these calls in the last 2 minutes. I really wish that Major League Baseball had a similar report for all the umpires. I know they have umpiring scores and they have a lot of internal reviews and discussions because they have all these automated strike zones. And so there's even services that you know, there's a Twitter account. I can't remember what it is I subscribe to or follow where it shows you the general accuracy and precision of every single umpire by game. So it analyzes, you know, the balls that should be strikes and the strikes that should be balls, how far outside or inside of the zone they are. So they give them all these precision and accuracy percentages. And if I recall, a good accuracy is, you know, in the mid-90s, right? Getting a little more than 9 out of 10 calls correctly. I looked up Angel Hernandez on purpose, and he's like at 83%. He's like really low. And to think that he's blowing like 1 out of 5 calls almost – is pretty bad. Think about that. I mean, there's usually 300 pitches in a ball game. And if he's home plate umpire, I mean, he could be blowing, you know, 50 calls a game, you know, balls and strike calls.
It's so funny. Angel Hernandez is getting straight bullets because, you know, he's Angel Hernandez.
I know.
Adam Hamari was the home plate umpire for that game on Friday. Which is the same initials as Angel Hernandez.
Yeah. it's just another AH.
Right, his overall accuracy that night was 91%.
Well, I guess that some of that 9% came on those last three. That's for sure.
It did. It shows the worst missed calls. You're talking about umpire scorecards.
Yeah, that's
the worst missed calls of the game. All went against the Giants. So we're gonna naturally feel chafed about such a thing. You know, it was Pomerantz to Slater, Darvish. Wow, and then a couple of Darvish early in the games that were called strikes that weren't. So, I mean, it umpire scorecards is the Twitter account where you can go see how they do. The average accuracy is 94% for a game.
I said his mid-90s was kind of in the middle there. Right. So, I mean, you know, he was below average, but boy, did it really bubble up in that last inning. I swear, yeah, he had his wife's anniversary or something.
I mean, he had to go somewhere. San Diego is a really nice town, and people want
to
go out.
Gas Lamp District, you know, I used to go down there for my GIS conventions all the time. I love the Gas Lamp District. It's fantastic. So, yeah, maybe he had a steak dinner reservation. He had to go, you know, whatever. Sergio shows here, you know, maybe another reason to think about robo-umps. Yeah, I mean, we won't have that conversation now. They're experimenting with it. You know, I personally am not on board with it yet, but, you know, as long as these guys are within the realm of kind of average accuracy, you know, I think we can all live with it. We have for over 100 years.
That's how I feel.
Outliers are going to happen like that game. It's just, they're going to happen. And every umpire has tendencies to call things low, high, outside, as long as they're consistent, right? You know, if he had been calling balls 4 inches outside the entire game, both teams would adjust to it. But when he just pretty much does that bulk of it, especially those three in a row at the very end of the game, that's when you're like, dude, you weren't calling those strikes most of the game. Why suddenly three in a row? Like, you miss once in a while because maybe, you know, something in your eye, you saw something different, there was a flash of light, you're like, yeah, that's a strike. But three in a row, that's like, yeah. Anyway, we won't beat this dead horse too long. But let's get to game two. It was another tight game until the end. Machado hit a three-run bomb in the beginning of the game off DeSclafani. But he settled down after that, didn't allow any more runs through his six innings pitched. The Giants pulled within 1-3-2 in the fifth, but again left the bases loaded multiple times. But in the bottom of the eighth, things kind of unraveled. Camila Duvall came in and allowed three runs on two hits and a walk. And that kind of made it 6-2. And the Giants just had one inning left to try and score those four runs. The San Diego bullpen, which is the best in baseball right now, allowed no hits over their last four innings of work. So, again, it was one of those games where you look at the scorecard and you go, oh, 6-2, okay, you know, they lost that one fair and square, no problems. But again, multiple opportunities lost during that game, which, you know, could have swung it in any direction and changed the whole situation on who would have been pitching in the eighth. But it is what it is.
Well, that's what confuses me. If Rodgers is going to be used 1,000 times this year, maybe throw him in a game where you're down a run instead of always when you're up a run.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of head scratching part to me. Like Rodgers was used yesterday when they had a 5-run lead at the time, and he wasn't used in a tight game here. So I'm still kind of scratching my head about Kapler's management of the bullpen. I got to say, I'm not impressed thus far with who he decides to throw out there. Now, Camilo's going to take his lumps.
Yeah.
Jurickson Profar was like just waiting in the weeds for that fastball that he threw him. And it was funny because Camilo adjusted and he didn't throw him a fastball yesterday when he faced him. But, you know, you're going to expect that. So why would you want to put a guy out there that could allow the Padres to extend their lead and make it, you know, an end of game situation? Because the Giants were in this game the entire time. Nothing happened after that Machado home run.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because Disco goes complete game shutout. And then in his very next game, he goes single walk home run to the first three hitters. So he goes through an entire lineup, you know, 3.5 times, doesn't give up a run. Three batters into this next game, he's given up three runs.
Yeah, no, it was really, really quick, and you're kind of like, uh-oh, is this going to be where he starts, you know, tanking? No,
right. It's
like
and he then just he, no, he settled down system. Just fine.
Yeah, that's three runs over his last, you know, 15 innings. That's plenty fine for us.
No I'm worries. Probably nitpicking with Kapler in the bullpen at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I understand he's got to give guys like Duvall a shot in situations like that because, you know, this bullpen is not as solid as we once thought it was.
Yeah, no, it's definitely showing some signs of wear and tear and, you know, some other issues, and we'll get into some of the numbers in a bit. So anyway, the problem was is that they lost those first two games, and now you're thinking, ah, crap, you know, the difference between losing two out of three and a sweep is pretty large, right? They sweep you, they gain three games on the Giants. They take two out of three, they only gain one game on the Giants. So it was really imperative. I mean, it's hard to call games must win in April and May.
Yeah.
But with a team like the Padres expected to do so well this year, it really did feel like a must win. Like they needed to come out and just, you know, put the Band-Aid on and say, okay, we'll take our lumps, lose two out of three. No problems. They gained one game on us, but overall we're 3-3 and no games lost, right? We're even Steven with them. And that's what happened. The Giants came right out and had a pretty smooth game. And so this is the other set of highlights I'll play to bookend the highlights as well. So let me go ahead and bring that up.
It's time to highlight the new guy.
Highlight the new guy. I know. We got to talk about one Mike Tauchman. So here we go. Highlights from yesterday's 7-1 victory.
On the mound for the Padres, Joe Musgrove.
28-year-old making his sixth start. And among major league pitchers, Joe ranks second in opponent batting average at 137.
And that's why it was so good. I mean, Musgrove has obviously had the no-hitter this year. Almost perfect game. But yeah, 131 batting average. That's insane. So that's why I wasn't so sure about this game. It was like, yeah. Oh boy, if Musgrove is on, it's going to have a
And then Profar time. Makes a play like that. I mean, that was an unbelievable catch. The guy's diving towards the wall. So you kind of think, oh, crap, it might not be the Giants' day again today.
Yeah, not quite Blanco, but it was very good.
Right-hander Kevin Gausman, who has been spectacular this year. He's a 7-year veteran, 30 years old.
One down here in the first inning brings up Fernando Tatis Jr.
I don't care who you are. You have to respect that, what he did right there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was like a Melanson pitch that we just highlighted.
Yeah, it was. That ball was like 6 inches off the plate. He managed to...
So why couldn't Flores do that? No, I'm just kidding.
You just got to laugh off a homer like that. And that was Tatis' first hit of the whole series. So the Padres won those first two games with him doing nothing.
Yeah, I know. That's what's really remarkable about it. Tatis was basically non-existent in the first two wins. Stella
hits a fly ball, shallow left, sprinting
over. We'll take things like
that.
Little bloopy bloops.
That guy totally almost grabbed the ball.
Oh, he totally did. It was a Giants fan, too. Yeah, it was like, uh-oh.
The Giants tie the game on a little bloop hit down the left field line. So the leadoff walk to the eighth place hitter is turned into a run. You're at the top of the order. Still,
and here we go. Newly acquired Mike Tauchman from the Yankees.
Hammered to right.
Yoink. Man, that was just so big when that was hit.
That's
I was just like.
Home run, and it's 4-1.
Nice sigh of relief. Like, they're not going to leave these guys on base again. Another opportunity lost. Nope.
They'd been doing it all weekend, and these were gifts. They had a walk, and then Gausman tried to bunt, and there was an error, so they finally took advantage of an opportunity.
Yeah.
He drives one to left.
The old man.
Grandpa.
Getting on his horse. Yeah, you know.
Grandpa on his belly, two down.
And that's a one pitch out, and Kevin Gausman appreciates the effort.
So here is Caratini. Here's his pitch. Splitter.
Look at that thing dive. Man, that's a vicious pitch.
That was just beautifully thrown.
I don't know how you feel, but when Gausman takes the mound now, I just relax. I feel like the Giants are going to cruise.
Now a swing, and there's a line drive.
Absolutely with him. And now, even though he's only had three starts, but I'm feeling like that with Alex Wood, too.
Yes.
Alex Wood has just been dominant. And to a certain extent, even Dee Sclafani. I mean, he's been fantastic. Other than that three-run bomb, I mean, he's been... It really is Logan Webb and Aaron Sanchez. Base. Even though Aaron Sanchez's
Nobody
stats,
out here in the fifth
well,
inning.
ERA, I should say, is still good.
Now the infield in.
It is a little smoke and mirrors, I got to admit.
Short, yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll see tonight with him.
Yeah. In Colorado, by the way.
Exactly.
A little worried about Stella. That. Misses where LaStella, yeah. He just hit that triple. So he might have had something happen on that triple and then just trying to accelerate.
Junior going up the middle.
One of the better defensive plays we see to make this year.
Not good.
Yep, Steven Duggar.
So LaStella is. I didn't know the results. I know he was going to have an MRI today. We'll talk about that.
No, I haven't seen it thus far.
Laying it out, he flips to Tatis and they force out Dubon at second base.
2-1, down to third. Nicely
yeah, I know there's a couple of Padre highlights in here. That's what you get with these mixed highlights. But
well, this was a big deal. Not only did they jump out 4-1, they added on to make it 6-1, and then here's 7-1. This was the most boring inning in the history of baseball. The guy walked four guys and like struck out three. So it was, I don't think the ball got put into play.
Struck out the side though.
Where is it? It's the bottom, the top of the eighth, top of the ninth, right? Walk, ground out, strike out, walk, strike out. And there you go.
Nice 7-1 victory. Gosman with the win. Six innings, six hits, one earned run, six Ks. Obviously, Talkman had four RBI with his three-run bomb and his base is loaded. So. Pretty good stuff. You know, the Giants escape out of San Diego, at least salvaging the rubber game. Not the rubber game, the final game of the series to avoid the sweep. And there it is. So that's a week in Giants baseball. They go 3-3. Stay in first. Well, actually, I shouldn't stay in first place. They acquired, vaulted into first place. Thank you. Milwaukee, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and talk about the trade. Mike Talkman, of course, was traded from the Yankees to the Giants for Wandy Peralta, cash, and a player to be named later. So, you know, hey, look, the one thing I think that is telling about this trade is he's a left-handed athletic outfielder who can play all three positions. Who does that sound like that the Giants already had at the alternate site?
Oh, wow, Lamont Wade Jr.?
No, well, he's been injured, but Duggar.
Oh, my God, that's right.
And so
Duggar could be the one getting edged out here.
Even though Duggar's on the roster right now because of injuries, I know he was called up, so he did come up. But this trade happened before Duggar was called up, and I just find it like almost telling, like Farhan's finally getting to the point where, you know, a lot of Giants fans have been. It's like we keep thinking Duggar is the guy, but, you know, he just seems to be a 4A kind of guy. And every time he gets his chance, either gets injured or he just isn't really showing what we think his potential may be. And I think this is a sign that Farhan is like, okay, we'll try another diamond in the rough. Here we go. He had one good season with the Yankees, you know, where he had like 13 bombs or whatever and hit like 269. So let's try him out. Let's see what he can do. And, you know, even though they're, again, both on the roster currently, I think they're going to give Talkman an extended tryout here. And he made a hell of a catch out in center field, running to the wall, which I didn't have a highlight of. He's obviously got, you know, a couple of good games for the Giants so far, his one big three-run homer. So he was popular with Yankees fans. He really was. I kind of went into their chat boards, and some of them were like, well, you know, he overextended his stay, and he just couldn't quite push through to, similar to maybe Duggar, the way we feel about him. But Duggar never came up and hit 13 home runs in a season for the Giants. So I think there's maybe more potential in Talkman to fill that role. So we'll see how it develops. But, I mean, so far the signs are encouraging from him because Duggar, who's been sticking around for the better part of 4 years now, you know, I just don't know if he's ever going to break through.
Talkman just seems more refined.
Yeah, you know he looks really comfortable and like a season. Comfortable and like he belongs out there. That's the body language I read, too.
Yeah, I so far I've enjoyed watching. This was a really good move by Farhan. You know, if it's going to cost Peralta and a player to be named later at some point, but yeah. I don't think that that's going to be that big of an issue. I think that was a smart trade by Farhan. He's always going to find these guys. And if Talkman can contribute for a week, a month, the entire year, then they're going to keep him up on that roster. And he is a refreshing bat at this point. I agree with you, Sergio. It's good to see his approach seems to be similar to what the Giants are looking for. You know, he works a count. He'll find his pitch. And so I didn't know much about Talkman. I'd heard his name before, but I didn't know anything about him before the Giants got him. But, I mean, that's to be expected. The Giants are probably going to go through 60 to 70 players again this year. So we got to get used to new faces turning through the roster.
That's the crazy thing. I mean, we had a lot of transactions with, you know, Sabian and company. But I tell you, Farhan definitely cycles through the roster faster than you can – you know, that you can even get to know these guys. Like you just said,
2019, you know? The Giants used like 69 players or something the entire season and in Farhan's first year. So here we are. We had last year was a hiccup. Here we are with another full season, and this is what we can expect, is he's going to go out and do these kinds of things.
Yeah, it's refreshing in the sense of, like, you know, if you're a young guy or you've been in the organization for a few years, there's pressure on you. There is none of this like, oh, well, you're forever Giant, we're just going to keep you around because we like you. There's clearly a sign that Farhan is nothing but business. Not to suggest that Sabian and Bobby Evans after him were not about winning. They won three freaking world championships. There's no doubt about that. But it's just the way they went about it is the Giants seemed to be able to absorb. And they had some of those great last-minute signings and free agent signings from old guys, you know, from your Burles to, you know, your Cody Rosses and, you know, there's a whole long list of them, obviously. But this is different. These are, like, not just older guys. These are some younger guys that have bounced around in minor league systems for a while. And sometimes it just takes a fresh place, you know, a fresh set of eyes, a fresh environment to reinvigorate some of these careers. And he looks at the, you know, the analytics, and he knows what these guys are capable of doing. And if they don't work, he just runs through them. He just churns them out. Revolving door. Okay, you were here for 3 weeks. We didn't see what we hoped we'd see. Took a flyer on you. Thank you for your service. DFA, you know, or whatever.
I mean, it's definitely DFA cutthroat. Like Sky Bolt gets signed, gets promoted, gets designated for assignment. Like, all within a week, this guy went through everything. The Giants have already used 36 players this season. So
I know, and we're
it's May 3rd.
28 games in. I know. Yeah. This is just crazy. So, all right, let's talk about a little bit of injuries. We saw Tommy La Stella, who was supposed to have an MRI today on his calf. They do expect him to go on the 10-day IL. It definitely looks like one of those kinds of injuries. Yaz is eligible to come off the injured list as early as this Friday, May 7th. Crawford is day-to-day with a contusion on his leg from being hit by a pitch. But, you know, we might see him start, if not come off the bench here in the series in Colorado. Johnny Cueto is still out until at least May 9th. And then Reyes Moronta experienced some forearm stiffness and has been placed on the 10-day IL. So it's sad to see him go back on the injured list. But, you know, the Giants have built this roster clearly for depth. We've been talking about it forever. And what's kind of nice about, you know, yes, you have your Buster Posey who's having a renaissance of a career or of a year. Longo, who obviously has been doing better as well. Crawford's shown some strokes of power, although his batting average is still low. Most of the other positions, when the quote starter, the guy who starts the most, he may not be the starter, but he starts the most, goes down, it really is kind of apples to almost apples. You know, they're replacing them with guys that are very similar or have strengths in different areas, but equally have like a similar war or impact on the game. So it's not like you're losing a Barry Bonds in left field and you got to stick out, you know, a Mike Tauchman out there. I mean, this is like, okay, you know, Solana goes down and obviously his bat is number one, but his defense isn't that great, right? Then you go to La Stella, who doesn't strike out much at all, has good contact. Now he's down. So now you're probably down to, you know, Wilmer Flores and Dubon commanding the middle of the field. We'll see what happens over at third. Longo's back, but, you know, he's been kind of, he might be even considered day-to-day right now. You just kind of feel like, okay, next man up, you know? I don't think it really, to me, it's not like, oh, no, the Giants don't have a chance of winning in Colorado now because Tommy La Stella is not at second. Oh, Wilmer Flores is at second? Okay, I'm fine with that.
I mean, this goes back to what we talked about leading up to the season, depth.
Yep.
And, you know, they're going to run out of it soon if these guys keep getting injured. But at the moment,
there is a limit. I agree. Yeah. There's a limit.
But you're totally right. It's, you know, it's replacement levels right next, you know, it's a platoon team. That's what the Giants are. They are a platoon team. And, you know, Kapler always tries to play the matchups anyways, so people are cycling through and getting their at-bats, and it is the next-man-up mentality. You know, Vossler's got to be coming back after La Stella's injury because Doobie's going to have to play second a little bit.
Yeah, I think Vossler might be called up, exactly.
No, I mean, if it's not Doobie playing second, Vossler's the one to do it, and then Doobie has to stay. You know, I know he's been struggling with his bat. He's gotten a couple of hits lately, but he's got to stay because they don't have another backup shortstop. They traded for Thyro Estrada from the Yankees again a few weeks ago, and he's in their system. But
right.
I don't think that they've even entertained the idea of bringing him up just yet. They said he will be getting at-bats this year. So, you know, the Giants kind of expect this. You know, it sucks that it happens, especially Listella seemed to be finally hitting the ball a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, every time one of these guys starts getting going, you know, an injury happens. Solano was hitting 300 at the time he went down. You know, we just got to kind of hope that Posey stays around. Posey's hitting like 359 or some crap.
Yeah, he's 359 right now. Unfortunately, he has not met the minimum plate appearance requirement for qualifications for batting average. He's very close, but he would be number two in the National League right now if he qualified. So, but he's a little shy of that. Yeah, we'll talk about transactions, some of them we just mentioned. But back on the April 27th is when they traded for Tauchman. The 28th, they placed Yaz on the 10-day IL. Let's see. On the 28th, they called up Sam Selman, and they optioned Gregory Santos, back down. He's one of those guys. I was listening to Gabe Kapler, and they really do like his stuff. But he said he had to have a discussion with Santos, and Santos understood. Like, look, kid, you got some good stuff. It's not that we don't believe in you, but just work on your reps down there. We need you to work on your reps down there. You can't, like, work on them up here and get trashed, right? Like, we believe in you. You'll be back up. Don't worry about it. They optioned, like you said, Sky Bolt to the alternate training site. Then they DFA'd him right after that. On the 30th, just a few days ago, they recalled Steven Duggar from the alternate site, and they also selected the contract of right-handed relief pitcher Zach Little from the alternate site. And then on the same day, April 30th, they optioned Vosler back down to the alternate site. Now, Zach Little is interesting. He doesn't have a very large resume. He pitched with the Twins primarily. He's had a couple of bad years, but I've been looking into some of the video highlights, and he says, you know, he has 1 1/3 now pitched with the Giants in the San Diego series. His splitter looks good.
Yeah,
and apparently it's developed lately. This is not what he was using when he was back with the Twins. And so that's kind of the excitement about Zach Little. And I'm hoping this is one of those little things that Farhan and the scouting team has picked up on, you know, where it's like, oh, this guy that didn't impress you with his stats and his age prior, but hey, look, he's got a new splitter. Maybe this is something special. Oh yeah, we got reports. Oh yeah, our scouts say this. Okay, let's take a flyer on him. And he goes out and he looked pretty good in his short, you know, 1 1/3 with the Giants so far. But I mean, these are those little things that may help. The Giants bullpen is struggling right now. They are 10th in the National League in ERA for the bullpen. Right. And so these little things are going to help plug in those holes. And so maybe Zach Little will be part of the answer.
I mean, they needed to get a little more right-handed. So at least they know that they can depend on him, because they needed to get some right-handed arms in that bullpen. And now we got a series in Colorado. So, you know, he's going to get work, because everybody's about to get work.
Oh, I know.
Especially with Sanchez starting tonight, I'm sure it's going to be a bullpen game.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, boy. Yeah, so I think that was it for transactions and injuries. I don't know. Did you have anything else that you've seen down in the alternate site or heard about that?
No, they released the I don't have them in front of me. I should have probably prepared this. The Giants released their single A, double A, and triple A. Who's going where? And I believe Ramos is going to double A. He's not going up to the triple A like I thought he was, and hopeful to see him here.
Yeah.
But the Giants did release their minor league affiliates, because the games are going to get started soon.
Yep.
So if you want to check out who went where, you can definitely find that out there. There's no big surprises other than, you know, I thought Ramos would go higher in their farm system. But other than that, you know, they set the rosters, but I think we both know that it doesn't matter. You know, we got guys like Santos, who was pitching in single A 2 years ago, now pitching for the big league ball club. So the Giants are going to throw whoever they can at the wall and see what sticks at this point.
Yeah, I know. I don't have the San Jose Giants roster in front of me, but I'm going to bring it up here on MILB.com. So, yeah, number one prospect, you know, Marco Luciano.
Yep.
He's going to be playing in San Jose, which is about 30 minutes north of where I'm sitting right now. So I'm really going to try and make my way up there to go see a game before he might get called up to to Richmond or higher. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But they also have, you know, Luis Matos and Kyle Harrison and a few others. So, but, you know, number one, of course, is Luciano, and I'm really excited to potentially go look at him. You know, being so close to San Jose, it's been nice to occasionally go up there in years past when I used to go to a lot of games. I mean, I did see Buster Posey and Bumgarner and Pablo and others. At the time, you know, you didn't really know. You're like, oh, this is a hot prospect. And I remember the two games I saw Pablo, he was a catcher. He was the starting catcher. So, I mean, that's what he was groomed to be and drafted to be originally. But it's fun to kind of look back on those years and go, man, you know, I used to watch these guys, these Giants Hall of Famers in a way, and heroes, back when they were in San Jose. And it's like, wait, when's the beer batter inning? You know, that's all I was caring about. But, you know, maybe Luciano is one of those guys where if I get to go see him, you know, take some pictures and just kind of remember the day, who knows, maybe in 4 or 5 years, I'll be like, holy crap. I remember seeing him down in San Jose.
Supposedly, so he'll be one of those guys. So
yeah, it's going to be good. All right, it is time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. All right, let's talk about it. The good, the Giants team ERA stands at a combined 3.00, which is second in all of baseball behind San Diego's 2.91. So nothing to sniff out there. That is just fantastic and better than I think any of us could have imagined. However, the starters do have the best ERA in all of baseball at 2.37. And that is well ahead of San Diego's 2.64, which is, I mean, that is impressive, man. That is nothing to shake a stick at. That is just remarkable. We're talking about a rotation that, you know, we couldn't even have thought about these five names really just a year ago. This is crazy. Maybe Gausman, right? But the rest of it is kind of like, what? Who? What? How is this patched together? And how is it so successful right now?
And Johnny Cueto's been injured, so he's not even a part of that.
Right. Exactly. That's not even really thinking about Cueto, who's only had, you know, two or three starts. Posey this week was 10 for 17, a hot 5.88 Little League batting average. That's incredible, right? He also had two bombs and five RBI and is now hitting the aforementioned 359, which would be second in the National League, but he's just short on minimum qualification appearances. The bad. Over the last six games, the Giants have not been hitting the ball as well as we had hoped. Belt is now 4 for 20, his last 23. That's a 174 clip. Flores 3 for 17, although I'll say 3 for 16 because of that, those three strikes, those three, you know. Anyway, that's a 176 clip, and the Giants hit 239 over the last six games. So it's not good, but they raised their batting average for the season to 220.
Did you update this week? I swear to God, this is the exact same bad that we had last week.
Similar. Yeah,
oh,
it's very
similar.
I'm hoping that, you know, there's like some better stuff to talk about, but I mean, there is. There's great stuff. When you talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, you have like a mediocre and the bad there. So it's well, they still raise their batting average to 220. That's the silver lining of hitting 239 for the week, right? And then, of course, the ugly, the Giants bullpen is still just not picking up the slack. They have good games, and they have a lot of bad games, a lot of stinkers. And there are some outliers in the sense that's inflating the CRA. I get it. So if the bullpen goes out there and lays an egg and gives up, you know, four runs in an outing, that's going to, you know, spike your ERA. But it's currently 10th in the National League at 4.46, which is almost double the starters' ERA. So, I mean, overall, the starters have absorbed way more innings because they've been so successful. They're going 5, 6, 7 per game. And of course you had Desclafani going, you know, a full nine the other day. So they're absorbing most of the innings. That's why their team ERA still stands at a nice low 3, but you know, the bullpen ERA just needs to come down a little bit.
I mean, if you're giving up three runs a game, you should be winning the majority of your games, I would think.
Yeah. So, and they are.
So, you know, we can't complain, like you said, in the overall aspect, but it would be nice to see the bullpen pick it up a little bit. And Kapler's trying. He's throwing everybody out there to see what works. He's trying. I mean, who knows? This is probably not the episode to go into it, but Kapler, you know, his decisions might be factoring into why the bullpen's struggling at times. there's nothing really egregious to that sticks out from this last week, but you know, somehow, some way they got to get it together. That's been the mark on Kapler since he was in Philly, is that he's not good at managing a bullpen. And, you know, it's easy to point fingers and jump on him right away, but I think that that's partly a result of the fact that they don't really have guys with set roles, and he's still trotting guys out there and trying them out in different situations. So I would expect the bullpen to get better as the year goes on, as guys start establishing their roles. You know, I know my buddy Doug mentioned to me, he said that the bullpen will probably look really good by June because Kapler will have figured out who is what and stuff like that. So we got to hope that the Giants at least, you know, see who fits in the roles, because they're not going to be throwing rookies out there in one run games every day. I mean, everybody's going to start finally getting their reps in. So, you know, I mean, I don't want to point the finger at Kapler, but you do have to wonder how much goes into it. But I mean, what can you do if they're not coming through? They're not doing their job. And so thank God the starters are. I mean, if the Giants starters were not doing what they're doing, they would not be tied for the best record in baseball or the most wins in baseball at this point.
No, clearly, if the starters were even just barely above league average, let's say, I don't even think they would be 500. I really don't. I think it would be that bad because they've had so many close games that they've relied on the starters to just, they had to dominate. They had to go six innings. They had to allow one run over six. That's just the way they've been winning. And so we already noted, you know, they're not doing well in the run score department per game. They're near the bottom of the National League. They're near the bottom of the barrel in batting average and on-base percentage. The only thing that they've done reasonably well in offensively is home runs and power and getting those timely hits on occasion, which have resulted in, I mean, you can point to at least three or four wins with pinch hit home runs or big home runs in the middle of the game. I mean, that's a big swing when you're six games above 500, right? Think about it. You don't win three of those games, you're 500. That's the swing. Three wins less, three more losses, and then you're right at 500 at 14-14. So those really have made a marked difference. And then if you lower the starter's ERA a little bit, or increase it, I guess I should say, you're under 500. So that I think you hit it. You know, that's their strength. That's the only reason that they're doing this well. I don't think we can expect the starters to maintain a 2.37 ERA through the All-Star break. I don't think that's happening. They're going to have burnout. They're going to have stinkers. They're going to have bad games. That's just normal. But that said, you also expect the offense to pick it up a little bit and hopefully make up for some of that. So everything goes in, you know, like in tidal forces, it ebbs and flows, and we'll see what happens. But I'm happy. I've been supremely impressed by this team. They finish April on a really good mark, and you know, May started off at 1-1, and we'll see what the month brings. But coming up, they have three here in Colorado, which is always just a wasteland of horrible baseball, and the Giants seem to have really horrible luck there. I don't know what, I'm sure other teams do too, but I'm just saying the Giants just always seem to lay eggs there. It just always happens. So I fully expect, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I fully expect them losing two out of three here. I just do.
Yeah, that's fair. I can see them winning two out of three, though. I'm really, with the way the offense sometimes hums, that's the thing, is the offense is hit or miss because they've relied on the home run so much.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping guys like Dickerson and Belt, you know, fall into that old Coors Field. But this is the week of teams that I'm sick of. We're seeing Colorado for three and then San Diego for three. Like, enough. Like, can we play the Dodgers? Can we see, you know, well, the Nationals?
I mean, so this will be nine games against after they're done, right? Both. The next six. So nine games for each team. That's half the season versus each team, because there's 18 against each opponent from the West. So they're going to be halfway done with the Rockies and the Padres at the end
week
of this
into May.
Week. That's insane. And I don't like that unbalanced part of the schedule. I like the unbalanced schedule where the divisions play each other more. I like that because it helps determine the true winner of the division more than if you evened it across the board, which they used to do, remember, for a period of time. They went from unbalanced back to a balanced schedule, which I hated, and then now they've gone back to an unbalanced, which I do prefer because it does give you a better, you know, measure of the true champion of each division.
Well, get this. They're not going to see San Diego again until September 13th after this weekend.
So that way, are they how are they crushing in nine games at the end of September?
It's four in mid-September at home, three at San Diego, and then three at home again to end the season.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so as much as the Padres were crammed into this month, they're crammed into September again, too.
Wow, bookending the season with the Padres. I mean, you know, it could be exciting if the Giants are still in it then and the Padres are in it, too. I mean, that's going to be real exciting baseball. That, you know, hey, look, shades of 2010. I'm just saying.
That's true.
We'll see what happens. But that's just weird.
That is very weird. I mean, and so we've got these three in Colorado. And like you said, it's the House of Horrors. Then they get a day off and three at home against San Diego. They only have six, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight home games in the month of May.
I didn't realize that.
So if you're looking for the Giants to sustain this start, it's probably not going to happen this month. Yeah. Like, I really feel like we're going to be talking about a third place ball club by the end of the month. And that's a shame because it's tough to sustain when you're on the road so much. But, you know, if you're going 500 on the road, things are going to even out a little bit.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And the Giants are going to fall back to earth. So I'm very anxious to see what happens this month and to see what the Giants do, because, you know, if there is any sustainability in this start, this is the month that we're going to see it.
Yeah, I hope so. By the way, at the top of the show, I did not mention Willie Dills, Gregory, of course, founder of TortureCast. He was planning to join us. In fact, he put out a tweet last Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, quote, "Yo, if the Giants are still in first place, at TortureCast is going to be real fun come Monday." So I retweeted that last night from the account.
Guess what? It is.
He was real excited. And it's fun. Hey, everyone, enjoy it while it lasts. Like Eric said, you know, May could be a tough month. You know, I know typically we'll see the June swoon, but I got to say, this is fun. This team is more fun than I thought it would be, to be honest. It's performing better than I thought it would be. And if they do come back to earth and kind of float around 500 the rest of the year, hey, 500 was a big goal for me personally,
right?
Not necessarily playoffs are, I think, are a couple years out, but you never know. I mean, aside from the Dodgers, who we fully expect to win their ninth division in a row, which I know they've come back a little to earth, they'll skyrocket again. Padres are the wild child. We really don't know what's going to happen with them. Cause the 60 game season last year, it's kind of hard to tell, but, we'll see what happens. And, you know, maybe the Giants will just blow our socks off and like hit your 88 games and at least compete for a wild card spot. You never know. And this is why they play the game, right? This is why they don't simulate games, which, by the way, that brings me to a point on MLB The Show. I got for our PS5, and I have the Road to the Show where you create a player, you know, and bring him up to the minor leagues. This year they have a special two-way feature because of Shohei Ohtani.
Oh my God.
You can have your player do both, right? So I said, oh, okay, I'll give it a shot. He'll be a position player and then a pitcher every fifth day. So in his second start of the year, granted, I'm starting on the easy level because I'm trying to get used to the controls and, you know, whatever. I'm just having fun. I had a perfect game through eight, and then I got pulled.
Oh, my God.
the auto manager pulled me.
You were on a pitch count.
I was on a pitch count, apparently. I was mad. I was like at 88 pitchers or something. I was like, what are you doing? I have a perfect game.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, it was funny. Yeah. So, I mean, the Giants have been surprising. So enjoy the ride while it lasts. We'll see if the House of Horrors comes true, or maybe the Giants will smack the ball around a little bit at Coors Field, which they have done on occasion. Maybe
who knows? They could score 30 runs the next 3 days.
Absolutely. That'll be good. All right, well, Willie couldn't join us today from that aforementioned tweet. He had some personal stuff going on. But that'll do it for episode 223 of the TorchCast. You can follow us collectively at TorchCast on Twitter, like us on Facebook, where we also stream this podcast usually every Monday at about 12:15 Pacific time at TorchCast.com or Facebook.com/TorchCast. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric, and at Willie Dills for Willie Dills Gregory. Let's see what else. Oh, I still am doing a podcast with Willie called Heart Edition. We record every Tuesday night. It's usually posted late Tuesday or early Wednesday. It's been a lot of fun. We're really talking about everything, a wide spectrum of topics. We joke it's a baseball podcast because we always end up pontificating about baseball. There's three of us that are major baseball nerds on that show. So we end up talking about half the show about baseball in general. But we talk news, politics, science, video games, sports. It's actually a lot of fun. Wide-ranging topics usually go about 2 hours. So put us on double speed maybe if you don't have time. But check us out at Heart Edition Pod or Podbean heartedition.com. Eric, you got anything else going on?
Just join the Giants Chatter group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, search Giants Chatter, and join the group. We have a lot of fun with game day threads. I've even seen Willie Dills dip into the game day thread now and again. So I think that's fun because I know he loves his Reddit. So we definitely have some fun stuff going, and there's always, you know, good discussions going on in there. And if you want Giants baseball news, because we are not a news breaking podcast, but if you want news that's broken, it's always going to come through the Giants Chatter group. Literally everything comes through that group. So,
yeah,
you know, do that. And then, like you said, like, follow us on TortureCast, like us on Facebook, all that jazz.
I will say, it is impressive that I know you have a team of admins, so it's a team of guys kind of running Giants Chatter. But, you know, the thread is usually good. I'm usually pop in every once in a while just to see what you guys are saying. I don't always comment.
Right.
I don't know how you guys can do it, or certainly how some of the other admins do it, because I don't have time to, like, follow, you know, every pitch of every game and be in a game thread for 3 hours. I can't. I got baseball practice with the kid. I got softball games with the daughter. I've got all sorts of chores. I got work I got to do. I mean, you know, working 40 hours a week. So it's tough, but I'm really glad you guys are there, because it is fun to kind of tune in and see what the conversation, the non-toxic, which is what I appreciate. Yeah. Conversation is all about, because you go to the other chat boards and game threads and Reddit and other places, and it's just a hellhole. It's just a minefield, and it's not fun, because all you get are people bitching and whining about everything. And at least this group is kind of, not authenticated people, but people who, you know, you have to be approved to get into the chat. But if you start going off the rails, you know, you're going to get removed, or at least your posts are going to get removed, and you're going to get warned.
It's already happened.
So it keeps it good. It keeps it good and relatively on topic, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm frustrated with this, but da 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 da, you know, talk it out. Not like, get rid of him, he sucks. You know, there's none of that, which is great.
Well, it has really shown me that, because I'm a Twitter guy, and it has really shown me that there's a lot of people that aren't Twitter people, and they end up somewhere else for the game. And so it adds to a good second screen experience.
It does. It does. Yeah, I usually have both open. All right. Well, that will do it. We'll see you next Monday. We should be streaming around 12:15 Pacific again for episode 224. I am hoping to cover my first game of the year next Monday evening against the Texas Rangers. So I'll update you guys on that, because that'll be fun to fully participate in Twitter and Facebook while I am a captive audience member in the press box. I can't go anywhere. There's no kid that can interrupt me, no softball practice or game I have to go to. So that'll be good. So that'll do it for Eric and for Willie. This is Chad signing off. We'll see you next Monday. Aboom.
Happy birthday, Willie.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.